This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. As genetic testing becomes more widespread, we have to answer new questions like, how much do we really want to know about our family history or our predisposition to disease? Back in the early 90s, members of the Arizona Havasupai tribe didn't get the chance to answer those questions for themselves. Instead, they were answered for them by researchers at Arizona State University. ASU geneticists collected blood from the Havasupai, hoping to unlock the secret of the tribe's high rate of diabetes. What the tribe members didn't know is that those researchers were also looking for other kinds of information having to do with mental health and their tribe's origins. The court battle that followed transformed medical ethics. It also inspired a new play by one of my favorite playwrights, Deborah Zoloffer. It's called Informed Consent, and it's just opened off Broadway to rave reviews. Deborah joins me here in our New York studios. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I love the play.
Oh, thanks, Ira.
You know, when you were back, here in our studios in 2009, and I asked, what are you going to be doing next? And you say, I think I'm going to write a play about the genome.
Right.
And you did.
I'm a little slow, but I made it back.
What is it about the genome that captured you?
I guess I'm just interested in whatever the latest breakthroughs are, and genomic research is just moving forward exponentially, and so it raises new questions that we've never had to answer before. Our parents never had to decide what they wanted to know about their body structure, about their future, about their mm-hmm. past, and also what they want to know about their children and how much they want to know before they have children.
Right. You know, it's interesting because we talk about this new issue, that you knock around and deal with very interestingly in the play is how much do you have a right not to know?
Right.
You know, and that's exactly what the theme of the play is.
It is. And I didn't realize when I read this article and decided to write a play about it, what a landmark case it wound up being. Because before that, informed consent had a lot more to do with physical harm, like Tuskegee or other studies where actual physical harm was done. But this is really psychological and emotional harm that was done with this study.
Can you give us a thumbnail of what the play's about?
Yeah. Well, the tribe's creation story is that they spring forth from the Grand Canyon, and they believe their blood is sacred. They've never given it for any other kind of research, but their rate of diabetes is so dire. It's 50% of the tribe, and there's less than 700 of them left. So they were in such a terrible situation that they were forced to turn for medical help. And what the researcher found was that the tribe originated in Eastern Asia, and so that contradicted their creation story. And that's what fascinates me, where science and religion sort of rub up against each other uncomfortably.
Mm. How did you find it? I mean, you said you were going to go write a play about genome. How did you stumble or look for this one?
Well, it's another Alfred P. Sloan Foundation play, and I had 4 days to get in a proposal. So
a whole 4 days?
Yeah, so naturally I went on Facebook, and I said, friends, send me articles. And I have a really good friend, Ben Stanger, who's at UPenn. He's a scientist and has his own lab there. And he sent me this article, and I knew immediately that was what I'd want to write about. I wrote the proposal the next day and then had to write the play.
Well, your plays now seem to be focusing on the tension between science and faith. I mean, your last play was also about science and faith. Right?
Well, the last play that brought me here. I've written probably four plays since then. Yeah. But
That play was End Days.
Right.
Yeah. That was a terrific play.
Thank you.
I love that one also. But that was also a question of faith. Where does faith and science intersect, and where does one begin, one end? Are they both legitimate in your own mind? That sort of thing.
Right. Well, we're all just trying to figure out how to make it through the day, how to deal with our own mortality and why we're here. And so I'm just fascinated by what people choose to believe in order to answer the big questions for themselves. And science, for me, answers those questions or asks more questions. It's where I go to sort of find wonder and awe. But I would never want anyone who has a belief in the afterlife or any sort of higher power to have that taken away, because You know, that's a source of great comfort too. So, I'd love to write about a place where both points of view can be respected, but there's always tremendous tension and push and pull there.
Mm-hmm. You created. Tell us about Jillian, the genetic anthropologist, and Arella, the leader of the Havasupai tribe.
Yeah. Well, Jillian is. I saw a number of TED Talks where there were scientists who might be considered a little bit fringe or maybe even crackpot who think that we're very close to finding a way to be immortal and that if we all just give our genomic material, that research will speed along so quickly that we'll find a way to become immortal. Our children's children will become immortal. And I thought, what if I have a character like that and who's also in a race against time because she knows her own genetic history and her genetic futures that she has early onset Alzheimer's. And so I wanted a character who was so driven that she would really go to any lengths, and it's to save her daughter. And then the spokesperson I have from the tribe, Arella, you know, her mother died of diabetes, and she's also worried about her daughter. So it's very much about mothers and daughters and what we pass on to the next generation.
Yeah, because there's the same conflict in her mind about her daughter as
right.
the tribe about learning what they would learn.
Exactly. And one of the things I learned, and I went down and spent a night with the tribe. The Sloan Foundation sent me down there. And one of the things I discovered is what was most devastating to them is having their story taken away from them, their creation story and their identity and who they are. And that really cracked open something for me in the play because Alzheimer's, my main character, Jillian, is losing her story and her identity. So I thought the parallel there would really create another level to the play.
So where does the fiction come in? How does your story depart from the real court case?
Both characters I've fictionalized. My grandmother died of Alzheimer's at something. My teacher, Marcia Norman, had said, you know, when you're at a loss, write about the thing that terrifies you most. And
take a role model, Marcia Norman.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah. But anyway, so in my family, that's Alzheimer's since my grandmother died of it. So I knew genetically that would be something that really was frightening for me to explore and also exciting to delve deeper into for a character. So that was not the case with the actual scientist. She wasn't studying Alzheimer's. She was studying schizophrenia. So I departed in that way.
It's a little, you're allowed to.
Thank you.
You're not doing a documentary.
Thank you.
That's what the theater is all about. Right.
Well,
you know, we learn new things about the genome every day. What looks like junk DNA today could tell us a lot 5 years from now.
Right.
Is there really such thing as truly informed consent when it comes to DNA?
That's a great question. And it's one of the questions I pose in the play. And I think what the takeaway is that you can't fully represent what could be looked for in a DNA sample. But if you want to keep looking further, what you need to do is come back and get permission. You have to ask for informed consent. So it's not just a piece of paper. It's a living document and a living contract between people.
Mm-hmm. What the play has done, it has given a vehicle for med students to discuss this, because this is something they have to confront. Are they using this play?
It's been such a thrill for me because med schools all around the country are asking to teach the play. And it was done in Cleveland at the Cleveland Playhouse and also at Jiva Theater in Rochester. And when it was done in Cleveland, Case Western was teaching it in their medical ethics classes. And so this was the case that they were studying, which was just by luck. I didn't know that when I went there. And so they were studying six different documents over the course of the semester, and the sixth was mine. The others were all medical and legal documents. And so I got to go in and be part of the class and listen to discussions, in the response to the play. And I think they discovered the same thing I sort of discovered when I went down and met the tribe, is that it's all very well and good to understand what informed consent is in an intellectual way, but when you put a face on it and understand the actual personal implications, it really changes the way you think about it.
Yeah. In case you just joined us, I'm talking with Deborah Zoloffer, author, playwright of Informed Consent, that's just opened off Broadway. How long a run do you have?
Just till September 13th.
Oh.
Yeah.
Any chance of getting extended?
Well, there's another play by Topher Payne coming in soon after, so I don't think we could extend very long, but maybe a little.
When you started thinking about the character here, did you have a piece of yourself in that? You talked about, was it your grandmother with Alzheimer?
Yeah, there's a lot of me in the play. People who know me well come and say, wow, there's a lot of you in the play. And the main character is not a lovable character necessarily. She's pretty prickly.
Obnoxious, all of them.
She's kind of obnoxious, yeah. And I love that about her. There aren't that many female characters in dramatic literature who are allowed to be obnoxious and pushy and desperate and angry and think they're the smartest person in the room, which is what she is. That's what she thinks. And so that was one of the things I really wanted to create, is a female protagonist who's that strong.
Well, part of that is whether she wants to be tested or not, mm-hmm. about having the disease. Did that change your mind about yourself?
Well, it's something my mother and I have talked about after my grandmother had Alzheimer's. And it was amazing to me because I think we had both sort of thought, well, someday. But after seeing the play, my mom is getting tested. She's actually done tests and hasn't gotten results back yet. But I was surprised. And people who've come to see the play, we've had couples come see it who thought they knew where they stood on getting their children tested or getting tested mm-hmm. themselves. And then they have arguments after the play. And so if I can make people argue with each other, I feel like I've done a good thing.
That's what it's all about. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with a playwright, Deborah Zoloffer, about Informed Consent, a terrific play. It does make you walk away discussing it, even with strangers. Everybody's talking about it. And there's a scene in the play where Jillian, the scientist, seems to be giving a TED talk. Mm-hmm. She's making some fantastical claims. Was that a little bit of a dig at TED Talks?
It's not. I love TED Talks. I could listen to them all day, really, online. So it's not. I'm fascinated by them. And so people have asked me that. I guess I can never get tired of them.
Yeah.
So putting them on stage was fun for me.
Mm-hmm. You visited the Havasupai Village at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. That must have been one heck of an experience.
It was incredible. It was an incredible experience. The tribe had 7 million acres was theirs, and they've been cut down to a few thousand acres. And even though that seems like a lot of land that they could still farm or have cattle, their water access was cut off when they first were cut down. And so, you know, during dry times, the crops would die and the cattle would die. So the circumstances are pretty dire. All their food, for the most part, has to be shipped in. And it's like government cheese, big blocks of cheese and white bread and Doritos. So there's not
very healthy stuff.
Yeah, and it was when I was there, it was almost 120 degrees. So it's not like you could ship in any greens or fruit and have it, you know, keep.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty desperate situation there. And
yeah, did it affect how you wrote the play? I mean,
it did.
Yeah?
It really
in what way?
Yeah, those specifics really changed, and I added a couple scenes for Arella after that. I felt like she needed. She needed as much weight in the play as Jillian does.
Hmm. Did you have your own moments of cultural miscommunication about what the tribe was really like, what life was like?
I did. And I've found myself stumbling along clumsily, just as my main character does in writing this play, making all sorts of assumptions and thinking I'm being culturally sensitive. But for one thing, in the New York Times, the article, there's a video showing the tribe collecting their blood, and in that video, they're singing a tribal song and going through some, you know, a ritual in collecting it. And I wanted to be very true to them and have that exact same song on stage. And I couldn't find it anywhere. And I asked a member of another tribe. I was very lucky to have members of the Seneca tribe helping me when I was getting the play first done in Rochester. And one of the members of the tribe said, "Oh, don't use that song. They would never want you to use the actual song on stage." And I said, "Well, what can I use?" And they said, "Well, make up a song, something, just make up words and make up a tune that's similar." And I thought, well, I'm Jewish. If I were going to use, you know, something that sounded sort of Yiddishy, right, I would be in big trouble. But that was making a big leap. I just made a lot of assumptions about what would be okay.
I think a little bit of the Yiddishy sneaked in there. It felt a little bit like I was listening to something like... So you're already working on another science play, I understand.
I am.
You're hooked. That's
good. I'm definitely... Well, I just want to keep coming back to talk to you, Ira.
Well, it's our pleasure. What's this one going to be about?
It's about neurology. I'm interested in learning more about the brain. And so it's going to be, you know, we've known since Dostoevsky and before that a part of the brain that's affected by epilepsy or a tumor, and people have ecstatic religious experiences. And so I'm gonna have that happen to my main character in my new play.
I understand it's a comedy?
Yes.
A comedy about a brain tumor.
Yes, I'm dying for a comedy. We'll see how it goes. You'll tell me.
I want to know who's going to play the lead in this. We'll have you back.
Good.
Thanks, Deborah. It's a wonderful play. It's Informed Consent. It's playing at the Duke Theater here in Manhattan through September 13th. Who knows? Maybe it'll get extended. It's going to go around the country?
Well, there's already people asking to do it.
Oh, that's terrific. Deborah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much
for taking time to be with us today.